Good morning, everybody. Welcome here. Welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay. I live in the Midwest of the U.S. in a city called Chicago, and I'll be the host for the presentation today. Today is Sunday, October 12, 2025. Let me give you the share ID for Friday, October 10th. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 22,861. That's 22861. And for the 10 a.m. meeting on Friday, 22,862. That's 22862. So this morning, A Vision for You presents the progression of my recovery and amends journey. Now, one of the things we learn as we study our text is that surrender is essential. It's crucial in order to recover from our affliction. And in fact, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous devotes 51 pages to the very first part of that surrender process, which is to admit that we have a problem, that we cannot, we certainly tried, but we couldn't overcome through our own efforts. And that's a heck of a dilemma to be in, right? And the Big Book begin by describing the physical, mental, and spiritual symptoms of alcoholism, or in our case, compulsive overeating. And later they ask us to acknowledge that we have this disease, you know, presuming that we do, and that we are compulsive overeaters. But before we can do this, we need to know the difference between a compulsive overeater and a non-compulsive eater. So it's crucial, it's imperative that we know this difference if we are going to identify in rather than identify out. You know, remember, your diagnosis must come from you. No one else can diagnose you. And well, here's what the Big Book says about self-diagnosis. On page 44, it says, "We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, in our case eating, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. You're probably a compulsive overeater. And if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer." Only a spiritual experience will conquer. So abstinence only might work if our disease merely had a physical component, but we learn that we have a far more insidious mental component as well. Our mind does not tell us that what we're about to do is harmful, even though the next bite is bringing us closer and closer to death. No matter how much we may want to stop, if we do not seek a spiritual solution, sooner or later, we're going to return to eating. It's not a question of if, it's really a question of when. And Dr. Silkworth, in the doctor's opinion, acknowledges in his medical opinion, unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. So to be clear, an entire psychic change is otherwise known as a spiritual awakening. And, you know, so the question really is, how were the early AAs awakened to a reality where they no longer desired alcohol? You know, where they no longer, you know, that compulsion was driven out. And the book was published in 1939, and essentially, the early Oxford group gave them a list of six things to do, six tenets or principles. And before I hand it over to Jane, I'll give you those. Number one, complete deflation, so an absolute surrender. Number two, dependence on God. Number three, a moral inventory. Four, confession. Five, restitution. And six, continued work with others. That's how they showed their faith, continued work with others. So these six tenets, these six principles were designed to foster a deep personal relationship with God, nothing more, nothing less. And this is our bridge to freedom. And the question remains for each of us, how free do I want to be? So joining us this morning to share her personal story of transformation as the result of the application of the 12 steps is Jane S. And Jane is a recovered compulsive overeater from the state of New Hampshire. And she's dedicated to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. So it is with much gratitude and warmth that we welcome her to the line this morning. Good morning, Jane. And Jane, you can press star one.
Here I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
There I am. Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much for that introduction and that trip down the reminders, all the reminders. My name is Jane F., and I hail from New Hampshire, Newfound Lake, and I am a real compulsive overeater that is living in a recovered state of mind today, free from obsession of eating, compulsive overeating, and a lot of other obsessions. And I live with a freedom in my heart and a peace and serenity that I've never had before. And so I'm honored to be here today of service. And thank you so much, Larry, for your service and the introduction, and Leia for the invitation. And to each and every one of you who's on this line, and many, many, so many hundreds of you I've never met, but you have helped me and walked. I've walked with you. We've walked together. Right, I pulled out all my vision notebooks, and I've been coming to this meeting for over 9 years now, and taking copious notes, and because I knew that the solution was here. This is where I've heard the solution. So welcome to anybody who is a newcomer to this meeting. This is an amazing meeting, and of course we meet 5 days a week in the mornings, 7 to 9 a.m., and then 10 to 11 a.m., and it's just one way through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 164 pages. So anybody who's sitting in the wings or just coming back, you know, and to all of you who are my brothers and sisters who walk with me, thank you. So I'd like to say a prayer before I start, because you'll hear it in my prayer. I want to surrender my will so that I may be a channel of your words today, God, please. Your words, your power, your will, your way of life. Please help me to share how you are performing this transformation of my mind, my body, my soul, and my physical body to become this authentic, honest woman one day at a time, one moment at a time. And help me to set aside the confluence of thoughts and ideas that are in my head that I think I need to share so that I can just have a new experience with you and my fellows here today. And share the words that you want me to share, God, because this is not about me. This is about being a channel. This is about sharing how my higher power, my creator, spirit of the universe, God, goddess, however you understand the power greater than you. I use God today most times just because it's simple, and I can do that today. And this is about how God has transformed me and continues to do so, God. So please help me share my experience, strength, and hope, and how I've come to where I'm sitting today, which is such a beautiful place, God, because of you. Amen. So, having said all that, I'd love to just start in 2009 when I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's really where my recovery started. But what I'd like to talk about is the progression of the disease first, because the progression of my disease has been running rampant in my whole entire life. I started as a child, I think, when I really look back in hindsight, you know, as a young child, I remember getting excited going to my grandmother's for holidays, because there was always so much food and lots of food that we didn't get at home because my mother was pretty strict with us and sugar and candy and that stuff. But I think that made me want it more. But I was always, even as a young child, always looking for something on the outside of me to make me feel better. I wanted someone to like me, somebody to accept me. I wanted to please somebody. I wanted to control it. I wanted to put something in my body that would make me feel better or not make me feel. And food did that for me when I was young. I remember going to my grandmother's on Thanksgiving and Christmas, and we'd have, oh my God, so much food. And then all the food would come back out again. But also on the table, only at Thanksgiving and Christmas, we were allowed a little sip of champagne that the adults were drinking. And I remember how that went down and just soothed my insides, kind of like the food, but it kind of hung on a little bit longer. And then fast. Thank you.
lost you. We cannot hear you.
Feel better. It helped me fit in. And I loved to eat. And I don't know. We ate as a family around the dinner table and every night and often by candlelight. And we lived a very humble life at the end of a dirt road 7 miles out of town and very close to the earth. My parents were, I was not raised religious in any way, but we were a very close family. And, you know, I had a really great life, but I didn't think so. And so fast forward into my teen years, my parents owned a sailboat shop right here on the lake where I am right now. And there was a big place next door that had an arcade, it had pinball, it had all sorts of stuff. And then there was a store with all my favorite things in it. And I would go earn money picking up cigarette butts or picking up soda cans and keeping the parking lot clean to go get a nickel to go get my favorite cold thing or penny candy back then was the thing, you know, and I was always looking for that. And I just remember how much it made me feel better. But my, my truth is that I think that honestly, I've been a food addict my whole entire life. I've just been an addict. I used to steal money from my parents' cash register to go play pinball or to go buy candy. And, you know, so, and I was always doing what I thought everybody else wanted me to do in my life. So, you know, therefore in school, I stayed on the honor roll. I played in the band. I played in the jazz band. I sang in the chorus. And I morphed into whatever group of people I was hanging out with. And if they were doing drugs, I'd do drugs. If they were doing, if they were drinking, I would drink. And yet food was always in the background. And I loved to cook. And my first job was as a waitress. And so, you know, in it, but I always found myself behind the line cooking with the guys and, of course, eating. And so this kind of progressed. And I graduated from school, went to high school, I mean, went to college and went into business school. But my forte was in hospitality. And I always got a job in the food service part. And so what a great place for a food addict and an alcoholic is to be in the restaurant business, I got to tell you. And so did that, and then I got married because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. And then I had a baby because that's what I thought you were supposed to do. Meanwhile, this disease of addiction with booze and food and drugs was just growing in me and progressing. I didn't even understand it, but I think that as it was growing in me, I was losing me. I never really grew into knowing who I was or what I was or what I wanted. And so I did what I thought everybody else wanted me to do. And my marriage, my first marriage took me down to Florida, and that's where we lived for a while. And I had my first son, and I was in the restaurant business, and I was cooking. And oh my gosh, I can just remember, you know, in the kitchen sometimes when I was alone, the copious amounts of food that I would steal, you know, and eat. And I could have anything or everything, but then I would try to hide things, you know, that I had. It's like when you cut a slice of prime rib off the newly cooked prime rib on the line, it's kind of hard to hide that from the owner when she comes into work. And it's just, you know, just crazy, crazy things. And my drinking was ramping up to at the nth degree. And that was what was really showing. And I was always on a diet and always trying to lose weight because I always thought that I was overweight. And especially after I had my second child, I got divorced. I got married again. I've actually married two alcoholics and had my second child. And by then I had really started, I never took off the baby weight from the first one. And now I was pregnant again and, you know, I had permission to eat again. So I was eating everything and anything and I never took that weight off either. And so it just kept piling it on and I just kept moving that bar, you know, of, okay, well, if I get to this weight, I'll do something about it. Or if I get to this weight and then I would do something about it, go on a diet. And I was never an exercise queen. I'm not one of those people that's an over-exerciser. If anything, I'm an under-exerciser and that I'm paying up for that now in my later years. But I could eat anybody under the table and I could drink anybody under the table, but I soon became a chef. I was one of the first certified working chefs in Volusia County in Daytona. And you know, that just gave me a ticket to eat everywhere and anywhere all the time. And then I got out of the restaurant business and got into sales. And what do you think I sold? I sold food. I worked for the largest food service distributor in the country. And, you know, I had a great job. I had a great job. Everything was good on the outside. I was married again. We had a great house down in Fort Lauderdale. I had a good job. I had a company car, had an expense account. And you know what? But I was miserable on the inside. And this disease of addiction was just progressing in me like no tomorrow. And at that point in time, I couldn't tell you how many diets I've been on, the pays and the ways and the fen and the restricting and just really compulsive overeating. And I actually, what I call the OFs, you know, I didn't care. And I didn't care that I was going to wake up in the morning hungover and just so bloated from overeating, because I would get drunk and then I would go eat bags and bags of the snacks of the company. I worked for Kellogg's and Keebler. So I had cases and cases of snacks in my house all the time, and I couldn't stay out of them. But I didn't think that was a problem. I didn't think my drinking was a problem either, because I thought I could always stop until I couldn't. So fast forward to the late 2000s, I moved back to New Hampshire with my two boys. I'm now divorced for the second time. I have two young boys that I'm trying to raise on my own. I'm an alcoholic and I don't know it. And I am empty on the inside. And I end up buying a Country Inn bed and breakfast with 19 rooms in Durham, New Hampshire, where I went to college, and tried to run this place. And I lasted about 5 years. And one of the things that my son and both my boys are chefs, by the way, and they're both alcoholics. You know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And I can say that. I'm not taking their inventory because they are, they're both sober today. I don't know about their program, but they're sober. But they're also chefs. And so my older son and I built a commercial kitchen on the back end of the inn so that we could do catering and open a restaurant. And so, you know, of course, I stocked my place with all my favorite beers and wines, and I made a menu to die for with every single thing, all my favorite foods. So, you know, by then I was really starting to blow up. And on the inside, I was a mess, just a mess. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. I knew there was something wrong with me, but I just didn't know what it was. And so God did for me what I had no idea he was doing for me at the time. God put a woman in my life who was my Ebby, and she took me to my first 12-step fellowship meeting, which happened to be AA, back in 2009 on February 5th. And that's where my recovery began. And a couple months previous to that, I had been to the doctor, and the doctor had asked me, I thought I was having a heart attack, and she said to me, she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I think I have a drinking problem." You know, meanwhile, I'm 180 pounds on a 4'11" frame and didn't see that problem. But she said, "How much do you drink?" And I said, "I think I have a drinking problem." So she sent me to this LADAC counselor who explained to me the process of the Jelinek curve and the progression of the disease of addiction. And it was a curve, like a horseshoe kind of thing. And so you're going down one side. And I looked at her and I said, "Well, I'm not an alcoholic." I said, "I'm not an addict because I can stop." She says, "Yeah, but if you reach a certain point of progression in your disease," she said, "you're never going to be able to turn back." She said, "Even if you stay sober or out of whatever your drug of choice is for, you know, a week, a month, a year, or whatever, but if you have that and you've progressed, then you're never going to be able to go the other way. You're not going to be able to turn it around. Like, you're not going to be able to cure it." But then I said, "Okay, well, what's this thing on the other side?" Which was a whole curve on the other side. The other curve, she goes, "Oh, well, that's recovery." And I'm like, "Well, how do I get that? I want that," you know? And then I looked at her and I said, "Oh, don't tell me I have to go to AA." I thought that was like a death sentence. Well, God was doing for me what I could not do for myself, and God got me to the 12-step fellowship, where I found a sponsor, and I found so many fellows who loved me and accepted me just the way I was, because I could not do that. I did not know how to love myself. I had no idea how to be who I was, because I didn't know who I was. And I started the progression of my recovery. And I'd love to say I jumped right in the steps and I got it, but that's not the case. But I jumped into service. I had got a home group, I got a sponsor, and my sponsor started teaching me about recovery and teaching me what it was like to live a spiritual life. And, you know, in my home group meeting, I was of service for the first year. I mean, and there was always, the steps were always hung on the wall and the traditions were hung on the wall. And on in those steps and traditions, there's we're taught in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, anything in italics is extremely important. And I remember seeing in step 3 and step 11, God as we understand him. And that was my saving grace, because I'll tell you what, I did not believe in God. And it was not because I thought God was a punishing God or God was bad or God was this or that. I just didn't understand. And I also didn't think that I was worthy of God. I thought that people went to church were better than me and that I was not worthy. That's how sick I was. I was such a mess. And so I, through the fellowship program and my sponsor who just loved me, and gently walked with me, did I start to begin to believe that there was something greater than myself. And it was only a few months, I couldn't tell you exactly when it was, but that Janet said to me, Jane, she goes, I think you might want to go check out OA. And I looked at her, and I was like, well, what's OA? And she said, well, it's Overeaters Anonymous. And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm not an overeater. And, you know, meanwhile, God only know how much weight I was then. But I had put down the booze, and I had put down the drugs and the cigarettes all at once. And the only drug I was doing was maybe a little bit of pot at the time, you know. But I did not realize that food was a drug for me. And even if I did realize it, I wasn't going to admit it, and I wasn't going to surrender to that fact. But I did surrender to the fact that I was a real alcoholic and that I was an addict. And so that started the progression of my recovery. And, you know, I remember reading in the Big Book, and I'm not a big quoter of the Big Book of pages, but I just remember the things that had really helped me. One of them was that, you know, I needed to concede to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic and in that I was a real addict. And so I started going to OA meetings, and what I was looking for was what had happened to me in AA, and what happened to me in that fellowship was that I don't want to say struck me sober, but I got into the program right away, and I wanted what everybody had. I went to meetings, I got a sponsor, I got into service, I did service work, I did the steps to my best ability. I would, you know, do the 1-2-3 dance, 12, 1-2-3, 11, 12, 1-2-3, 4, ooh, can't do that, 1-2-3, 12, and, but I kept coming back. And I kept going to OA, and I started to get, I got some sponsors who would give me food program or food plans and all of this. And I got to tell you, I guess I just wasn't ready to fully concede that I was a real compulsive overeater. When I look back in hindsight, I just wasn't ready. And I needed to cease stopping, you know, cease fighting everything and everyone, which it says in the Big Book. I thought I was, you know, I could say the third step prayer, I could say the seventh step prayer, I could say the serenity prayer, I could go to meetings and talk an amazing talk. But guess what? I really wasn't walking that walk because I wasn't really being honest about who I was because I just didn't know. And so fast forward to 2016, I just pulled out all my vision books, and the latest one or the long farthest one back I could find was September of 2016. So I guess my EBI for OA, I thought it was my AA sponsor, but it's really not. It's this woman, her name is Sarah, and she was in local meetings with me, and one day I walked into an OA meeting, and there was only one other person in the meeting. It was in a hospital, and I walked in and I'm thinking to myself, oh, here I go again, because I just wasn't finding what I needed like I had found in the other fellowship. And then in walks this woman, Sarah, who I absolutely adored, and we had already had a beautiful connection in the other fellowship. And I looked at her and I said, what are you doing here? She said, oh, I'm a compulsive overeater. And I said, what? She goes, yeah. She goes, I've been in recovery for like 28 years. I'm like, what? And we got talking, and she started telling me her story, and she does the Big Book step study, And that's a very slow process, but she was telling me about how she felt like she had been inwardly transformed. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I so need that. And so, you know, I asked her to be my sponsor. And so she started me on the journey. And she's the one that said, she's the one that introduced me to Vision for You all those years ago. And I started listening, and I started taking copious notes. And I have now, I have like a dozen notebooks of quotes and things that you all have said over the years that, you know, I may never meet you and you may never meet me, but you helped save my life and you helped transformation in me and this progression in me, which was basically developing a relationship with my higher power. And, you know, we talk about spiritual awakenings and spiritual experiences. I feel like I have a spiritual experience every day I wake up and get another day to seek God and to seek, you know, these steps in all I do. And so I'd love to say that I stayed sober. I mean, I stayed neutral with food, but I didn't. I would something in my life, an outer circumstance would happen, and I would use that as an excuse. I'd say, I'm just going to die. A fat, happy Italian chef. That's, you know, I could not imagine giving up my food because that would give up my identity. I'm a chef. I'm compassionate, passionate food about food. I love to eat. I love to cook. I love to entertain. I love to throw big parties. And so I was like, how could I do that? So I kept going back to the food and it just did not work. But you know what? People kept telling me in the other fellowship, Jane, you're fine. You're good. If you put your head on your pillow at the end of the night and you're sober, it's a good day. And you know what? It was. I had really good days. But what I realized, what God helped me to realize over the years as my recovery progressed, was that I really wasn't being rigorously honest with myself. I wasn't being, because I really hadn't done the step work. And for me, this is one of the biggest convincers this time around for me is on 164 when we read A Vision for You. And it talks about God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. And my sponsor used to say that to me. God will reveal more. God will reveal. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. I get that. The answers will come. I get that. And then I would read this and the hair on the back of my neck would go up because I knew I wasn't doing this. If your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. And it's like, oh, I had sponsees in AA. I would feebly try to take them through the steps the way I had been brought through, but really never had been brought through all the way. And I had really never done all the way because my truth is that I never really finished my amends. I never really got honest about my amends. And so I was dragging around. You hear about dropping the rock. I had backpacks of rocks that I was carrying still, but I hid them. Just like I can hide my weight sometimes. Some people say, oh, you don't have any weight to lose. I'm like, yeah, I do. I just hide it well at times, or I could, until you couldn't anymore. But so I had to get honest. And so I continued in the OA programs here and there, off and on, but never, I can't say I didn't leave Vision for You. I did from time to time, but quite honestly, I am a very judgmental person. I'm my first impulse is to judge. And so, like Larry was talking about this morning, we need to relate in. I was not relating in. I was relating out. I was finding every reason. I was finding every little bit that I would hear from somebody on a meeting. Oh, well, I'm not that bad. Or, oh, I don't need to do that. Or that's over the top. You can't tell me if I eat an ice cream cone today that I'm going to die tomorrow. That's not going to happen. I just was finding all these prejudices and justifications of why I was not a real compulsive overeater, and that I could manage it. And so fast forward to this COVID. I think it was right around COVID. I was miserable. I was at my highest weight. I put the food down. I mean, I put the booze down in 09, but I had picked up the food with a vengeance. And, you know, in and out of OA, you know, once you go to an OA, any kind of a meeting, and then you get a food plan, and you start on that spiritual journey, and God starts revealing stuff. Had the food down for a little while to start to see things, so it kind of ruined my eating. So I knew in my heart as a chef and in the hospitality, because I knew what I should be eating and what I shouldn't be eating. I just chose not to. Just like when I was drinking, I knew that I'd get drunk and have a hangover in the morning, and I didn't care. I called it the OFS. And my current sponsor reminded me very early on in our work together, she said, that's the spiritual malady. And I just didn't get it. I just didn't get it. You know, I had surrendered to my alcoholism. I surrendered that I'm an addict in many ways, but I was not going to surrender and accept that I was a real compulsive overeater. So COVID came along, and we all got quarantined and all that. That was a really kind of a good thing for me, because that was my first introduction to Zoom meetings and all that. And I believe that year they didn't have the birthday party out in California live. So one of our dear fellows, brothers, did a meeting, a Zoom meeting, one the whole weekend on the 12 steps. And so I have a book where I went through, and I ate my way through that whole weekend, by the way. But I got to the end of that, and it was all I could hear was, put the food down, put the food down. And so I finally put the food down, and I was on a meeting one morning, and I heard this woman share, and she was talking about how she had to do a 10th step to do the share, which I thought was quite interesting. And so we got talking, and she started me through a journey where I actually went through the 12 steps in a way that I had never been before. And she took my hand and put my hand in God like it had never been before. And I wrote my ideals out, and I made a list of all my amends, and I started making my amends. And I would love to tell you that I finished my amends, but I didn't. And what happened? I wrote my ideals out. One of my ideals was about what I wanted for a partner, like who I wanted to attract in my life. Meanwhile, I hadn't shared with you was, I don't know how to do relationships. So I've been married twice and divorced twice and in dozens of relationships that did not work because I don't know how to be in a relationship. And so I wrote this ideal out, and then she said to me, she says, okay, go be that person. And it was just so enlightening. And you know, so I was living kind of this, I was living a double life once again. I really hadn't finished my amends. I was like, oh, I'm good. I'm neutral with food, and I'm sober, and this is good, and full of gratitude, doing all sorts of the right things, always doing my food plan, I always do an action plan every day. I've been doing that for years. And it just helps me to write it down and write a Dear God letter in the morning. But you know, I really wasn't walking my talk. And I identified myself right out of vision again. And life was good. Life was really good. And I went on a trip to Hawaii. And I remember talking to the chef or calling the kitchen and trying to get some special, you know, whatever I needed for the luau that night or whatever. And I remember getting to the place, and it was like 250 people, and there were so many people, and the waitress just looked at me like I had three horns on my head. And you know, what do you mean special something? And so I said, well, that must be God telling me I can just eat whatever I want. So I gave myself permission to eat, and that's where it started. And I went like back out all the way, and it took me 2 years to get back. And in that 2 years, the next year, God's got a sense of humor. You know, meanwhile, I'm still sober, and I'm still working my AA program to the best of my ability, and I have sponsees, and I do have a really good connection with God. But what I realize now is corroded, and I didn't realize that. And so, because I really hadn't admitted to my innermost self that I was a real compulsive reader, I still really wasn't connected to God fully. And God found it necessary to put an amazing gentleman in my life. And a man who is teaching me one day at a time. We walk together now in learning how to live love unconditionally. And I didn't know how to do that. I was only learning how to love and accept myself, you know, in all the years of my progression of my disease. I mean, of my recovery. Excuse me. So this man comes into my life, and we were together not even a year. And I remember him saying to me, you know, I don't think I can do this. He said, you're not very happy sometimes. He said, a lot of the times you are. He says, I love you very much. He says, but sometimes I just don't like you. And I realized, you know, I'm still not where God wants me to be. I knew it in my heart. I could feel it. I just didn't. I wasn't ready to surrender. So God gave us a blessing of, I was invited a couple of years ago to be a chef on a trip in Italy, of all places. I always wanted to go to Italy because that's where my Italian side of the family is from, and a little town. And so long story short, we went to Italy. And I ate my way through Italy, but I also did enough walking, I think, that I came home and I hadn't gained a lot of weight. And I'm like, okay, I think I gained maybe a couple pounds. My gentleman friend lost weight. And I'm like, okay, well, this is cool. I said, so I started eating some of the things that I had not been eating, but ate in Italy and was okay to do it over there because the food is all different. I come back here, and in 2 weeks, I put 10 pounds on. I was like, holy crap. And I was absolutely miserable. I was irritable, restless, discontent, just all of it. And I had, if you looked at my life, my outside life, my older son was sober 2 years. My younger son was not, but that was okay. I was praying for him every day. My gentleman friend and I had bought our cottage here on the lake together, and we were living on the lake. Life was good. We had just gotten back from Italy, and we brought his whole family up here to meet my family, and everything was awesome. And you know what? All I could do was think about the food. So I bellied up to the picnic table of all the wonderful foods I had, and I bought all the crap that I loved to eat when I was out, and I did, and I just sat there and gorged. And it was our 2-year anniversary. We've been together for 2 years, and so the kids were like, "Well, we need to go get a celebration." So I went and got some things to celebrate with. Instead of getting one big, bakery item, I got a bunch of stuff and put it in the freezer. And everybody was here, and everybody ate one or two or whatever, and then everybody left, and they were going to go back over to the other place. And I said, you know what? I don't think I'm going to go. I think I'm going to stay here. I don't really feel that well. What I really wanted to do was eat, and that was my last binge. I ate my way through that whole freezer of every single one of those frozen treats, and that was my bottom. That was my last binge, and I remember it like it was yesterday. My gentleman friend came home that night. He says, I think I'm going to have one of those frozen whatever. And he goes, why? I said, because I ate them all. He said, why'd you do that? I said, because that's what I do. And I realized when I said that, you know what, I am a real compulsive reader. So we were supposed to go to Virginia that weekend for 4th of July or for the week, for a couple weeks. And I looked at him and I said, you know what, I'm sorry, but I can't go with you. I need to stay here. And he goes, why? I said, I need to go back to Vision for You. I need to go back to OA. I need to get a sponsor, and I need to do the steps, and I need to do my amends. And I knew it. I had been doing living amends. I had been doing some financial restitutions and all of that along the way. And I had, kind of copped out I copped out by saying, half measures will avail us nothing. Well, it availed me a little bit. Because I'd say, well, I'll be willing, if I run into this person to do it, or if I run into this person, I'll do it, or if this instance comes up. But, it wasn't. I actually had a file full of amends that I had not made. And so on July 1st, I had my first conversation, or my second conversation with my now sponsor, who I asked to take me through the steps like my hair was on fire. And I'm like, I couldn't believe I said those words, because those were one of the ones I identified out with all those years ago. Like, my hair's on fire? And that's the way I felt. I'm like, I am ready. I was fully surrendered. I fully accepted that I was a real compulsive reader. And I needed this connection with my higher power that I really didn't understand to just deepen. And I heard in her story, I just heard that, and we just had an instant connection. And so I called her, and she said, do you have your big book? And I said, of course. And so she gave me some non-negotiables, and then I'm thinking, oh, here we go. And yet she said, are you willing to go to any length? And I said, yes. And she had to remind me of that a few times in the beginning, but I was so sick and tired of feeling the way I was, being sober and not being able to enjoy my life. And I knew that the design for living was in the big book. And I knew it was in the first 164 pages. And I knew it was because I had not done all the work. And so we jumped into the step work. And before we did, she took me to page 89, where we begin working with others. And she said, read that first page, or that first sentence. It says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics or compulsive overeaters. She said, are you willing if I take your hand and we walk through the steps when you're finished? Not if, she said when. When you're finished, will you reach out and bring someone else through? And I said, yes, by all means. And I wanted to. I just had never, in 15 and a half years of trying myself, I had never fully surrendered. I had really never let go with both hands and given it all to God. And I did. And I was ready. And she, in some of the way she took me through this time, I had never been through the steps in this way. Steps 1 through 3, some of the writings that I was given to do were just so much from the heart, you know. And then we do that third step reading. And when I call, I also, something she did that was different that had never been done for me, because I never could feel a part of the group. I just didn't feel like I was in the middle of the herd. She gave me like a dozen phone numbers of recovered women to call. You know, one of my non-negotiables is calling 3 people every day, and 2 of them were to be recovered and 1 of them not recovered, and that's okay. So that gave me permission, and I've walked through the first year of my recovery with some people that, you know, came in when I did, which is a beautiful thing. But then I have the experience, strength, and hope with all these people who are recovered. And so when I read my third step to some of these women and was giving my whole entire life to God and stopped playing God and really truly let go, it was just very transformational for me. And I was already in neutrality, food neutrality. I had only experienced that once in my life. But I got to tell you, as a chef, as a chef and a lover of food and booze and drugs and anything that will make me feel good on the outside, to be in food neutrality and alcoholic, you know, neutrality around alcohol is such a gift. I was like, okay, I want to keep this. And so, you know, I listened to podcasts, I went to meetings, and, you know, one of the questions early in my step work was about, or not questions, but was about being honest. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, how it works about honesty, it talks about rigorous honesty. Well, what's rigorous honesty? It's about being thorough. And so, you know, this inventory that I did this time, I was a bit scared, but not really, not anything like before, because I knew that God was guiding me. I actually, once I got to that place of neutrality, I felt safe and protected, because God is the captain of my ship today. God is my hero. God leads me. God guides me. I can't tell you how many times my sponsor would remind me, because I've got that built-in forgetter, that it's not about me. It's God. Go to God. Lean into God. I would call her and ask her a question. She said, have you gone to God? And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I'll call you back. and about writing prayers. And so I did my step 4, and my step 5, actually did it while I was on vacation. Wasn't supposed to go on any, you know, make any big decisions or go on anything, but I was already scheduled to go on vacation. So I got to write my 4th step up in Canada, which was really beautiful. And we didn't have any Wi-Fi where we were staying, so I had to drive into town to make my outreach calls and make calls to women who had been through the steps. And when I get stuck, I could call people. And it's just like I felt such a part of this time. It was amazing. And so, you know, this is the progression of my recovery. It was so different this time because I was in a different place, and I had fully, I feel like I fully surrendered, and I fully surrender every day to God, accepting who I am, you know, and seeking His will for me. And then so when I got to 5 and I wrote my ideals, when I came into this fellowship all those years ago, so many acronyms in this fellowship and the other fellowship and every fellowship, one of them was HALT. And back in the day, HALT for me was don't get hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And, you know, so in my early sobriety, it's like that. For me, I took that as, okay, that's permission to drink. I mean, permission to eat, because I couldn't drink. So don't get hungry. Okay, well, I'll go eat. So I ate. Today, when I wrote last summer, when I wrote my ideals, I like to try to simplify things so that I can remember them in my mind and carry them in my heart with God as I walk throughout the day. I wrote my ideals this time were about honesty, acceptance, love, and tolerance. I have to be honest. I had to learn my progression, include my progression of honesty. Like, how am I honest? And I'm still learning one day at a time, one moment at a time. I continue to grow in that area. And then acceptance of everyone, including myself, right where we are on our journey for today. That simplifies it, but I went a lot deeper in my ideals. And then love and tolerance, because I know love and tolerance are our code. And I realized that is HALT. And I had developed that kind of a thing years ago, probably after I did the steps back in COVID. But I really wasn't living by them. So then I got to 6 and 7, and that was a deal changer for me this time as well, because I had homework to do. I never really, 6 and 7 are a paragraph, a piece in the big book, and in a 12 and 12, they're a lot more expanded. But, you know, I was given a little bit of homework, you know, take a piece of paper and write all my character defects on one side, and then on the other side, write the opposite. And that's where I choose to live today. So like today, I have my little sheet, and I have the same sheet that I wrote over a year ago. And I don't even unfold the other side. I don't need to see that other side, but I choose to live in my, so part of my prayers in the morning with God are help me to aspire to my ideals and help me to live in the opposites and putting God first and live in acceptance and surrender on a daily basis and live in faith and let go and let God with both hands, be honest, be authentic, be patient, be willing. I could go on and on. It's all the good stuff. It's the opposites. And then I got to step 8 and 9. And this is where my sponsor's like, okay, so this should take a couple weeks. She goes, you're going to write out all your names, which you really already have. And if you had any harms that weren't on there and you need to add those, you add those. And I said to her, I said, this isn't going to take me 2 weeks, Denise. I said, I'm going to need a little more time than that. And I had to be honest with her. I said, I've never really fully done all of my amends. And so we started going down through it. And she helped me. She goes, I want you to make a schedule. I want you to go get 3x5 cards. I got 4x6 cards because I like to do it big. And I started this process. And, you know, my amends, part of my amends that I've been working on in the last 16 years of my recovery and my progression was amends to myself. I could not make amends to other people, and so I had to learn how to love and accept myself, because I didn't know how. I would look in the mirror and I had no idea how to love the person I saw, because I just didn't. And I didn't respect her. And today, like this morning when I stood in front of the mirror, which I do every day, and I said, I love you. I absolutely love you. And then I say, God, thank you. Because God is transforming me one day at a time, one moment at a time, and continues to do so. And I can see it today, and I can feel it. But I had to continue that progression of amends to myself. So I think that's how, when I got to the amends process this time, the progression in my recovery was there. I was a different person. I was showing up differently. And yes, I had made a lot of living amends, and I was living a lot of my amends, but I also had face-to-face amends that I had not made, and I had, and there were, you know, amends that I couldn't make because people had died. There was also a big stopper for me, and the first amend that my sponsor really helped me with was, I alluded to the fact that I was married twice, divorced twice, and in many relationships. I used relationships, I used men in a very dysfunctional, hurtful way to them and to myself for years. And it's because I didn't love myself, and I was looking for that outside gratification. And I got to tell you, it never worked. I have some friendships, I have some good people I met, but then, you know, I have people that, you know, I couldn't tell you how you go make amends to somebody who you picked up in a bar, you know, 25 years ago, who you have no idea what they even look like or what their name was. How do you do that? And I had not let go of that stuff. I had not let go with both hands, and I didn't know it. And God revealed that was something that was in me and holding me back. It was down. It was clogging me. It was corroding me. It was corroding my inside relationship and my channel to be aware of what he really wanted me to do and be. So I remember my sponsor said to me, she goes, oh, she said, I had that same problem. And it was like, oh my God, such a weight was lifted just right there, you know? And so she said, well, list out all the names. And so I did. And I can't tell you, I'm not going to tell you how many people it was. It was a lot. And she said, okay. She says, my sponsor had me do three at a time. And she said, and lift them up in prayer the same way you do like the sick man's prayer or the resentment prayer, you know, where you wish everything for them that you want for yourself, wish happiness and love and all that. So I was like, okay, that sounds really cool. So that was, I started with that. And I remember the first morning I did it and I was like, well, this is going to take me 2 weeks just to do this. And so the first morning I did it, I remember I was sitting in here on my couch and I did the first three. And it felt so good. I was like, well, that's cool. And I just felt such a relief and it was so pure and beautiful. And then I did the next three and I just was, God led me that morning to do something that I had no idea was going to do. It took me 2-3 hours. And what I ended up doing was going back to the list and taking the list and taking the people one person at a time. Even one of them was a guy I picked up in the bar one night, you know. And I put them on each on an individual piece of paper. And I wrote a little prayer for each one of them of wishing them, you know, well and happiness and peace in their heart and whatever, wherever they are on their journey today for it to be good and for it to be happy. And then I took it downstairs in on my beach and I built a little fire pit and I built it in the shape of a heart and I lit a fire and I burned them and I gave them up to God in prayer. And the smoke went up and that's an Indian, Native American, Indian, healing way. And it was just, oh my God, it was so cleansing. I came in, I was just like, I was so free. And it was just so beautiful. And I remember calling my sponsor and telling me about it. And then she says, okay, so now what's next on your schedule, you know? So I started writing letters. I started, you know, doing, I made a list of everyone that I needed to do. I made a schedule. And what ended up happening for me is that I had a trip planned to Florida. This was probably September that this happened, that I was in my amends. And I said, well, gosh, I've lived in so many places because that was something I did too. I did geographic changes all over the place. And I said, I've done a lot of harm in Florida. I lived and my business was over the end where I did the end of my drinking and drugging and eating and all and harms was in on the seacoast in New Hampshire. So I booked an Airbnb over in the seacoast and I took my cards and I made a schedule and I made appointments with people and I went over and I visited with people or tried to get appointments with some people to make amends for things that had happened, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Well, no, 15 years ago, excuse me. And, you know, I pulled out this folder. I, honest to God, I had this folder. It was a yellow folder. I still have it. It's a yellow folder, and it was just, and I had stuffed all this stuff in there, these amends that I was going to make one day, someday. And on the outside of it, ironically, had a bumper sticker that said higher power on it. Now, is that crazy or what? That's the insanity of my disease. Kept me stuck in that tiny little file. So I pulled everything out, and one of them was, I knew of a few things that I wanted to do, people that I had just kind of left. You know, I had employees at my business over there that I knew I hadn't treated well. And so I went over and, you know, I just made an appointment to go like spend time with my innkeeper who is now a mother and she worked with me for 5 years. And I know that I was crazy. She went through my craziness, my boy's craziness. And, you know, I just went and spent time with her and her family, her three little children. And we just hung out, you know, and I did that with the lady who brought me into the fellowship all those years ago. I just went and hung out on the beach and we went and had dinner and we just spent time together. Part of my amends had been just giving back the time that I stole from people. And then one of the things that I had tossed in that little file was a little business card from Roston's Farm Stand, which was a farm stand down the street from the inn that I used to own and run. And I used to go down and get my vegetables from him when I could, certain vegetables. But, you know, that was back in my dishonest days. And, you know, I would go in and buy, you know, I don't know, $30 worth of vegetables but take $50 worth of vegetables, but leave $30. And so I owed him money and he didn't know it. They didn't know it. It was one of those honest, farm stands. I don't know if you guys have any of those anywhere around where you live, but we still have them up here. And So he had no idea, or they had no idea. But I knew in my heart. And so when I went back to the Seacoast, I went over there, and sure enough, there he was, like 78 years old, still working his farm stand. And he says, "I don't know if you remember me." And he says, "Yeah." He says, "You used to own the inn." So we got talking, and I was doing a little shopping, and I bought a few things. And when I went to pay him, I was just getting ready to pay him, and there was people just came in behind me. So I kind of hurried it up, but I was like, part of me wanted to just run out the door and not do what I was going to do. But my bill came to like $60, and I gave him an extra $100 in cash. And I explained to him, I said, back when I was at the inn, I said, I used to come down and purchase from you, as you know. I said, but there were times when you weren't here. And I said, I didn't leave you enough money. I said, I feel in my heart that I owe you this. He just looked at me. And he he didn't quite know what to say. And he just said, thank you. And I know the people behind me heard it as well, because I couldn't hide it. And I just can't tell you the feeling when I walked out of there, just a surreal feeling. And there was another guy who had the landscaping business that I would buy my plants and stuff at the inn. And, you know, once again, when I went under foreclosure, I never claimed bankruptcy. I owed him money and didn't pay him. So I couldn't find him. His place was closed. And so I had to do some work, and I had to research, and I finally found him, and he was working in another place. I went to the place, the hardware store that he worked at, and he wasn't there. He was on vacation. So I left a message for him, and I left my email. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, he emailed me, and I told him I thought I owed him some money. And I told him what I thought I owed him, and he told me what he thought I owed him, which was a little bit more. And we split the difference, and I sent him a check, you know. And I could go on and on and on. It was just so many of them that I made, which was so beautiful. And if people want to call me, offline, I can tell you some more. But I got to tell you, probably one of the biggest ones that I made I had to go to Florida. And that's at the same time that all this was happening. In September, my youngest son, who was also an alcoholic, he was at the end of his drinking for this time round, and he had decided that he once again was going to take his life, and called his father and me to tell us that. And so that brought us all together again, which, on the phone. And at that time, we found out that his father was dying of lung cancer. He had just been diagnosed. And it was true that the silver lining of that was that he got sober, my son, which was beautiful. My ex-husband was already sober when he got sober back in the day. And I found out that he was now dying. And so I had already planned to go to Florida in December. And I asked my sponsor, can I do all my Florida amends down there then? And she said, no. She goes, I think you should do it now. And I'm like, and I did have the means to do it. I just got off a little bit of money, and I booked a flight, and I booked an Airbnb for a couple of weeks, and I went to Florida. And wouldn't you know, a hurricane came coming in across the state of Florida directly over Daytona. And I had a choice to run, and I ended up staying. God just gave me the courage to stay. And I spent time with my ex-husband and his mother and their family. And, I really didn't I didn't feel it was appropriate because I didn't want to give him my amends on his deathbed, and we didn't know if it was his deathbed or not. But the long story short is, when I went to leave 2 weeks later, I looked at him and I said, I am so sorry for all the crap that I put you through when I was drinking. And he goes, you? He said, I was the alcoholic, like we got into this, not an argument, but he was like, that wasn't you, it was me. And it was like, and he gave me a hug like I've never had before from him. And it was just a passionate hug. It was an acknowledgement that we were okay 20 years later, or God, now 30 years later. What am I saying? 30 years later. And, so fast forward to that winter, we went ahead and went down for, 2 months, and I spent time with him. My gentleman friend and I spent time with he and his girlfriend and his mom, and we just spent time. And I walked with him in this last year of his going through this cancer. And then fast forward to a couple weeks ago, he was getting really bad and he went into hospice. And, you know, it's hard, you know, when you're this far away. I asked him, I said, do you want me to come down? He goes, no, I don't think so, not yet. And then things kind of took a change. And a couple weeks ago, I got to talk to him. His mom called me and said, he's here, he's right here, and he'd like to say hello. And I said, okay. He said, he can't talk much because he can't breathe. And I said, okay. And so, you know, what do you say? But I asked God for the words. And God said, I said, thank you for all the good times. I said, let's remember the good times. And I said, I hope that you're in peace. I said, know that I love you. And he said, I love you too. Hung up the phone and I just burst into tears. And I was like, thank you, God, for that. And I, as mom said, I think he's only got a few more days. Well, Hunter, four more days later, she called me again and she put him on the phone again. This time he couldn't talk. And I just said to him, I said, Doug, I love you. Thank you so much. I said, I hope you're in peace. And we hung up the phone and 45 minutes later, he passed on. And I'll tell you the beauty in my heart, the peace and serenity and where God has brought me in this progression of my life, my recovery and my amends is that I have no regrets. I have no regrets. We're scheduled to leave for Florida in a couple weeks and go down and spend 6 months in Daytona. And he won't be there, but his mom will be and his family will be, some of them. And I wish I could say I'd be spending time with my son, but my son is not talking to me right now. We're estranged, and I have to just let that go for what it is. But all I can say is that the 164 pages of the Big Book have been an absolute transformation for me because they have brought me to that psychic change that has allowed God to come in and just perform this transformation in me that's just so miraculous and that I will never understand, and I don't need to understand. I don't even need to understand what God is or who God is. I don't go to church. I'm not a Christian. I'm not a Catholic. I'm not an atheist. I'm not an agnostic. I don't know what I am. I believe that God is everything and in everyone. And if that's the case, then I learn from everything and everyone, everything I see, smell, hear, taste, feel, do. It's all God. And God walks with me everywhere. God brought me to Italy this year, and I was sober, and I was abstinent, and I was neutral, and I lived in freedom, and I did not pick up food in Italy, and I cooked for the group again this year. We ate our way through Italy again. For me, it was abstinently, and came back home, and I weighed the same weight as when I left, and I felt the same way as when I left, and God brought me through. And so God is my hero. God's the captain of my ship. God is everything for me. And I think I'm just going to leave it there and say thank you, God, and thank you, Vision, and thank you for everyone who's on this line. I love you all.
Wow, Jane. Thank you for such a thoroughly captivating presentation this morning. We're so grateful for sharing your story and for your journey. Just a lovely contribution for our archives. And before we transition to Q&A, first, please stick around until the end of the recorded portion of the presentation this morning to get Jane's contact information. We'll ask for that at the end of the recorded part. And also, let me give you the share ID for the presentation this morning. That number is 22,863. That's 22863. So now, if you have a question for Jane, that's Jane S. in New Hampshire, press *1 and give me your first name, and we'll questions only, please, in the interest of time. Who has a question for Jane this morning?
Leia.
Mara.
Tony B.
Ashley P. Chicago.
Okay.
Alexis.
Leia Tony. Alexis. Leia, Tony, Ashley, Alexis, I have so far. Who did I miss there? Somebody else.
Marge in Connecticut.
Could you add Mary Lee R, please?
Sure. I got Marge and Mary Lee. So let me tell you who I heard so far. Leia, Tony, Ashley, Alexis, Marge, and Mary Lee. Anybody else with a question? Okay, let's start first question from Leah, followed by Tony. Leah, good morning to you. Leah, press star one.
Okay, I'm talking away. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Jane. What an incredible, incredible share. I can't start my question without telling you. So here's my question. How do I keep my sponsees with that incredible, incredible vulnerability that you keep going at, which I hear very clearly? Thank you.
Press star one again, if you would, Jane.
Oh my goodness! Did anyone hear me?
We did, Leah.
We
did get
your
question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Jane, go ahead. Yeah, thanks, Leah. Jane, can you press star one? Okay, we might be having a little bit of technical difficulties getting Jane back on. Maybe Jane will call back in and we'll get to the question. So in the meantime, while we're waiting for Jane S to get back on the line and press star one, I heard from, so we had Leah, Tony, Ashley, Alexis, Marge, and Mary Lee in that order. Does anybody else have a question while we're waiting for Jane? Get your name on the list, rather.
God has a great sense of humor. Here I am.
Did you get Leah's question? I did.
And I just wanted to reiterate it. It is, you're saying, how do you keep your sponsees vulnerable? Was that
okay.
the question?
Yeah. I get dropped when amends get to even discussing amends. I hear that vulnerability in your voice, and what I'm asking is, how else do you keep that vulnerability to open to working those steps?
Oh, okay, great question. I guess so. What I'm hearing is for me, the progression of my amends, as I shared, took me 15 years to get to where I am today. So it took me 15 years to get to a state of coming from a place of recovered, mind, a recovered place where I could actually use my brain and have the willingness. And, you know, so my sponsor, she can't do for me what I can't do for myself. Only God can do for me. Only God can do for my sponsees, and only God can do for your sponsees. So it's all about taking their hand and putting their hand in the hand of God. And all I can do is share the way I did it. And so I have a sponsee who made it through the step work, and I remember when she came to step nine, and she'd done some amends, and she was sharing. I said, "So how do you feel?" And she said, "Well, like she didn't see it. She didn't see and hear what I saw, you know." So I think sometimes we don't see it right away, but it comes in the progression of, you know, continuing in the work and continuing in the practice and continuing on a daily basis to connect with your higher power in whatever way you can, so that he or she or it can reveal to you how to be vulnerable. You know, we can't, and once again, it would be in prayer. You know, help me to be vulnerable, help me to be listening, you know, open, help me be willing to do these things. And some of these ideas that I was given were given to me by my sponsor, who were given to her by her sponsor, you know, because that's how it works. We help each other walk through. So I'd be happy to talk to anybody about that on the side. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Leah. Okay, the next up with the question is Tony, followed by Ashley. Tony, good morning. Tony, press star one.
Hi, sorry. My name's Tony. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater. Took me a while to unmute there. Thank you so much for this share. It was really very, very beautiful, Jane. Thank you. And it was the same question I had, so I'm going to ask another one. I was going to ask you how you dealt with sponsees, you know, going through if they're reluctant and things. And I think you pretty much answered that. So I wondered if you could talk a bit more about how you've grown in honesty, acceptance, love, and tolerance. And I love that acronym for HALT. Thank you.
Thank you for that question, Tony B. That's awesome. Yeah, I love HALT. It's, you know, I try to do, you know, KISS, right? Keep it simple, sweetheart. And so I try to keep it simple. I think that for me, I have to, one of the things that I did that I didn't share, and I'll share it now, is that I need to stay in fit spiritual condition. That is the solution, right? That is one. I have to stay close to God. And how do I do that? And so one of the things that I did early in my recovery last year is we listened to a podcast over and over and over, because it takes me a lot to absorb it and for it to become part of my being and my intention. And then what I did was I wrote a like a cheat sheet, which I have in front of me, and I call it Honoring My Recovery. And what it is it's the 16 ways the 16 things that can lead to relapse. So I don't even want to look at what will lead me there. I want to look at how can I live today in honesty, acceptance, love, and tolerance. And number one is to honor my recovery is to make God one. Number one, always. He's my director. He's the captain of my ship. I need to pause and pray and listen and proceed. And number two, big one, big, huge, just as important, right under God, is honesty. And it's like my honesty continues to progress as my recovery continues to progress. I know that things that I don't want to tell my sponsor and share with her, maybe around my food or around my actions with my gentleman friend or with my family. I have a son who is very sick, and I'm having trouble with that whole situation, and she, you know, reminds me that I need to be honest about it and I need to stay quiet. It's none of my business. You know, I have to practice acceptance and surrender on a daily basis. And then being humble. Humble is a huge one for me. And I was like, okay, how do you be humble? I've got a little cheat sheet on the back of my car here talking about practicing humility daily. I accept myself and others for where we are on our journey just for today, putting God first, being humble and kind, being willing to take low positions, putting others first, be gracious, pray, seek God's will, be forgiving, seek feedback, build others up, be open to change. I have all these little cheat sheets around my house, in my books, in my daily readings, you know. And then to live up to my ideals, which is the HALT, is, you know, I do the third and seventh every day. I do my aspirations, my ideals that I aspire to, living in my opposites. I recite them, and I have a prayer. I do prayers. I was doing them consistently the first probably 8 or 9 months. I'm not as good as it now about doing the ones that I write down, but I spend time with God every morning asking, you know, for help in that arena. Help me to be, you know, accepting and tolerant and loving and surrender. But first, that's fine. First, I have to surrender to God and give him my will in all areas of my life. And today I list that out. So that kind of helps me. I don't know if that answers your question, but it kind of opened up the door for me. Thank you for your question, Tony. Pass.
Thank you so much. It does.
Larry, hit star one.
Okay, all right. Ashley's up next, followed by Alexis. Ashley, start the question.
Yes, can I be heard?
You can.
Amazing. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jane. This was such a wonderful lead this morning. So my question, what I heard you say, and feel free to tell me if I got it wrong, was that you have kept strong recovery and you worked the steps within ever-evolving definition of God and, you know, what higher power means to you. And I'm working with a sponsee who we're on step three, moving into step four, and she's been really exploring her relationship or her definition, right, of God, knowing that she just turned her will and her life over to the care of God as she understood him. And it's leading to a lot of interesting conversation, you know, and this feeling of needing to have the exact definition of what that belief is. And it just sounds like you were able to work through the steps and keep a strong recovery, even with having an ever-evolving understanding of God. I hope that makes sense what I'm asking. And so I'm just curious if you could speak to that, you know, especially when you were going through the steps, how did you navigate working the steps and building this relationship with something that you were growing an understanding of? You mentioned journaling and some other things. So yes, with that I pass. And Larry, let me know if I need to star mute again to mute myself or star one. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Ashley, for your question. I can answer it pretty simply. It's been a progression, just like my recovery is a progression. My progression, I came into 12-step fellowship probably an agnostic. I don't think I was ever an atheist. I can find God out in nature, out on the ocean when I was sailing. I used to stand on the bow of a boat and sailing down east in the coast, off the coast of Maine, and I'd be singing a song, and it was some as share two songs with you that have helped me. Once again, I like to keep things simple, so I have things that I just repeat over and over in my head, and they sink in. And one of them is called Day by Day, and I believe it was from Jesus Christ Superstar Play back when I was in high school. But I've always loved that song. I used to play it on the piano, and it's the words are simply Day by Day, Day by Day. Oh, dear Lord, please. Oh, my gosh, no, I'm not going to remember it. Three things I pray: to see thee more clearly, to hear thee more dearly, or hear thee more clearly, and to follow thee more nearly. And I just take those words and I put them into my life. And then the other way, and it, like you said, it's been a process. It's been evolving over years of being in program. And I also, part of it is watching other people get it, and then being able to, in hindsight, look back at what God, whatever this is that's working miraculously in my life and transforming me, I can see a difference now. I can see it in pictures. I can see it and hear it in my relationships with people. I can feel it in just my own being and my soul. And I think it's something that God does for us. I don't know that we can do it ourselves, but I think that we can cooperate. And lastly, I'll end with this. The other song is for me, and I just listened to it again this morning. Lifehouse Radio or Lifehouse Group has a song called Everything, simply Everything. That is God for me. Listen to the song. Listen to the words. I've written them down. I put them in my heart and soul. They're very simple. And for me, that's God. God is everything. So I pass with that.
Thanks, Ashley. Okay, next up with a question is Alexis, followed by Marge. Alexis, good morning.
Yes, could you please tell me, in your opinion, what the difference is between surrendering to the food and the spiritual awakening?
Surrender to the food and a spiritual awakening.
Yes.
In my opinion, I think, I mean, I surrender every day. I don't surrender to the food anymore. I remember back in my early days in OA, I'd hear this woman in the meeting talk about taking the lion out of the cage three times a day. I don't surrender to the food. I surrender to God. I surrender my will, my life, all of me.
Jane, press star one again. I'm not hearing you.
Am I there? Oh,
there
hello.
You yeah, you are.
Okay.
Yeah, we heard the first part, yeah.
Where did I leave off? About surrendering to God?
Food. Yeah, that we don't
surrender
food. Right.
I don't really surrender my food. I don't have to fight with the food anymore. Food is not a challenge anymore. Food is not, I can cook anything, anywhere, for anyone, and be any place. I can cook for 5, 10, 20, 100, 200. It doesn't faze me. God has me safe and protected. I have to surrender myself, my disease, my addictions, all of them, my obsessive thinking, my will, my whole entire life to God. And that's where I get the spiritual awakening. That's where God comes in and reveals to me and allows me to be open and aware to feel the nudges and feel what I need to do. I hope that helps. Thank you.
Thanks, Alexis. Yeah, you bet. Okay, next up we have Marge with a question, followed by Mary Lee. Marge?
Yeah, hi, thank you. This is Marge L. in Connecticut. Oh, Jane, thank you so much. It sounded like my story. I haven't reached the recovered state yet. I never really fully surrendered. I wanted to ask you about amends. You said you had some you hadn't done yet. I'm afraid that's part of my problem, other than the huge one about fully surrendering. Did you know everybody that you owed an amends to before, you know, when you said you hadn't made them all? I have people that I don't even know their last names. It's from 35 years ago, and I don't know if they're dead or alive, and I don't have their last names, and I have no idea how to do it. Doing amends. Just wondered if you had any input on that. Thanks.
Thanks for the question, Marge. It was a progression for me, and I think that because of my progression in my relationship with my higher power, who I can call God today, has revealed to me things that.
Jane, press star one again. We're not hearing you. Okay, we might be having a little technical difficulties again this morning. Jane, if you can, press star one, or if you need to call back in. Hang tight, everybody. Okay, while we're waiting for Jane, and we'll get back to the
I'm back, Larry.
Oh, there you go. We hear you.
I'm back. I'm sorry. I don't know where I got booted out. So let's see. The question again was about amends. Can you give me a brief, can you repeat the
just
question?
She was just looking for some input. If you had any input with regard to amends she was getting ready to, hasn't made amends yet, maybe some insight.
Okay. Well, I would encourage you to give me a call and we can talk about it. But I think that every day that I get to wake up and I get to start a new beginning of seeking God's wisdom and revealing things for me, He shows me things. I just need to be open and willing. And in talking to people, in when I wrote my fourth step, I think it just brought up things. And there were people's names that came up that, you know, for instance, I'll give you one. A woman who I went to college with, and we spent a year in Bangor, Wales, the UK, living and going to school there at the University of Bangor, Wales. And I did a lot of damage over there because I was drinking and I was just a selfish young woman. And so I wanted to make amends to her. And I had to look all over the place. I had to actually go over to the university, go to the alumni center, talk to the people in the alumni. I didn't know her married name. And lo and behold, she married the guy that she fell in love with over in Bangor. And I found all their information. And the lady called me back and she says, I'm so sorry. She goes, I have good news and bad news. And I said, well, what is it? She said, well, the good news is I found her. The bad news is she's passed away. So, you know, so all I could do was write a letter And I, what I did was I wrote a letter to her husband, and I wrote the letter to him, and then I let him know that I was going to be in the area. If he would like to meet, I would love to meet with him. And then I also made a donation to pancreatic cancer research or whatever, because that's what she passed away from. So that gave me an amends, and I did my part and cleared my side of the street for that and let that all go. So I hope that helps. That's just one, but call me on privately, March, and we can talk if you'd like.
Yeah, great. Yeah, we'll get your contact information if anyone wants to reach out to Jane at the end of the recorded, at the end of the Q&A. So with our final question, we have Mary Lee. Good morning, Mary Lee.
Oh, good morning, Mary. And is it Jane? J-A-N-E?
Yes. J-A-N-E.
Well, you told my entire story. It's blowing me away. The amend that you made to the husband, the words that you were presented with through your connection to your higher power, divine director, God, can you remember any of those? I am just doing that very thing. I made my part of my amend, but there was more of it that I needed to do with, and my husband, my first husband, is dying. I want to finish.
Okay. You mean what I actually said to him?
Yeah, if you can remember, just kind of, because it was just very similar.
Oh, it was. Well, it's kind of like the sick man's prayer, the resentment prayer, whatever. You wish for them, you know, peace and happiness and to remember the good times, because we had a lot of good times. We had a lot of bad times, but we had a lot of good times. And, you know, in my 15 years of recovery, I've done living amends with him, but never had made a face-to-face amends. I just went and spent time with him and met his new girlfriend, and you know, we would talk over the years. But I just asked him to remember the good times and let him know that I loved him very dearly, and I do. We have a son together, you know. So and if you'd like to call me, please do.
Thank you, and I would hope. My sponsor had me put an S on the end of that about, you know, the first part and then not being too serious. But I love your rearrangement of that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mary Lee. And Jane S., thank you so much for your contribution this morning. We're sincerely appreciative of your time this morning. Wonderful, wonderful job. Okay, so we're going to close our meeting, and as soon as we do that, after that, we will get Jane's contact information. So I'm going to read from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.